Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 11th of November, 2020. And if you look on the surface of things, yesterday in the US, we had a fairly calm session. Yes, the NASDAQ was down and down actually quite a bit. If you look at that on slide two of today's slide deck, the broader S&P 500 about unchanged, but over in small cap land, a pretty solid session, closing at a new local high there. Peter, you've talked about there's a lot going on underneath the surface here, and we had this weird phenomenon where the some of the big mega caps or tech stocks were almost a kind of a safe haven or a way to trade the K-shaped narrative, the way they benefited so much from COVID-19, and now we have potentially a vaccine underway. Is that what's going on here? Actually, a broadly a strong market, and this in these specific big cap names are weak, or is there more to it than that?
Well, we really observing something that reminds me of the quant quake 1.0 in August 2007, and we had one a couple of years ago again 2.0. We're seeing off the charts rotation in and out of momentum stocks and value. I mean the return differential between momentum and value last 2 days have been out of this world. I mean we're talking about outlier observations that are so big that if you assume the markets were normal distributed, which they are not, it would be a 15 sigma event. So something that wouldn't happen in trillions and trillions of years. So it's a big move that we're seeing. As you also alluded to, we saw yesterday value being the most bid equity factor. And then on the flip side of that, we had the size factor, at least the way the Bloomberg have done the size factor. Normally size factor is that small outperforms large companies, but in the Bloomberg terminal, they've reversed it. So that factor was down, meaning that small caps outperformed mega caps yesterday. And we're seeing this back and forth around all the segments. I think there's a true carnage going on out there. A lot of repositioning it because, as you said, the market expectations were so solid on high uncertainty, potentially low effectiveness for the vaccine, closer to something that we used to on the flu, close to 50%. And the commitment from central banks to keep rates extremely low, and that fueled that K-shaped recovery as you talked about, and created this safe haven. I have put in on slide five a little bit of an idea of what you can see here, because the small chart to the left-hand side is the earnings growth, and you can see why people were attracted to the NASDAQ 100. Just spectacular growth in earnings compared to Europe and the broader market S&P 500. But actually, earnings have been flat for 2 years. So the rise in NASDAQ have been purely fueled by a lower yield, and that you can see on slide on the same slide, but on the right hand side, you can see that the free cash flow yield have dropped from around 4 to 3% in that flat earnings period, maybe even more than 1%, and that came at the same time as the global investment grade bonds yield also came down. So it has been purely a yield game. And as I had the conversation with Steen Jacobsen, our chief investment officer, the other day, what happens in these low interest rate environments, it supercharges growth stocks. So they become mega caps. But we sort of get trapped in this low interest rate environment where things become super sensitive. So just a very quick example before we move on, and then we can come back to equities later. If you have a company like Microsoft trading at a 3% free cash flow yield, if the free cash flow yield moves from 3 to 4%, you're looking at, assuming no change in earnings and free cash flow, you're looking at a lower market valuation of around 25% just from that 1 percentage point move in the interest rate. So as you can see, as you get closer and closer to zero, you sort of, it's almost like a black hole. You're being sucked into a weird world you cannot get out of, and everything becomes super charged to interest rates. And that's the environment we're in. And that's
Actually, to connect that thought to another slide in today's slide deck, slide eight, we have that is one of the biggest things that's pressuring this market, or to me, one of the most interesting developments as well. We have yields headed higher, certainly in the U.S., but elsewhere too. So on the right on that slide, you have the German 30-year, which is really sat up and taken notice of the situation, is back towards zero, a huge move yesterday. And you see on the left, the U.S. 10-year benchmark hitting towards 1%. And that is basically the post-COVID wipeout high in yields. And in fact, it was a little bit lower than that. So we're at new highs for the cycle here since back in the spring. And as you say, this is a considerable move off of what was almost a 50 basis point low. And the next obvious chart point will be that 1.5% area. And I guess, Ola, that was the story that really knocked gold off its throne yesterday, or knocked it so much lower. Sorry, not yesterday, but the day before yesterday, with this COVID-19 potential vaccine news. And I guess that's still what gold traders are chiefly mulling, sort of caught between the somewhat weaker dollar in places, but also this whole real rate story, huh?
Absolutely, John. And just carrying on the yield talk, if you take a look at slide 11, I've basically just broken down the nominal yield, which we can see has been more or less range bound now since March. And as you say, it's now trading at a cycle high. But the underlying components, break evens and real yields, that's really where gold traders are taking note. And we're seeing right now that the recent rise in nominal yield has been driven by a reduction of rallying in real yields more than the rise in break even. So right now so as long as we see this play out, rising yields led by real yields rising, then obviously gold is going to be struggling somewhat, and that's why we are even though we had this, we haven't really we struggled to recover from that big post election sell off, and that just basically just boats calls for caution, I think, here, at least in the short term, because we obviously need to work out why is the yield curve steepening in the US? Why are yields rising? Is it a reflation trade that's back on track? Is it rotation out of stocks into it, other things? And if that is the case, then I think gold eventually will recover again, because if it is the inflation focus that takes over. And I think also adding to this, the political landscape in the US is just horrible. It's just disintegrating, and we're starting to get a little bit worried about what's going to happen next there. And I think that's also potentially just attracting a bit into gold.
Yeah, I wonder on that front. We don't have anything firm, but obviously Trump is refusing to concede. And you have this weird situation where it is his personality and himself, the cult of personality, some might argue, that has him in control of the voter base. And there's so many Republican politicians that can't really step out dramatically against Trump. So they're sort of playing this awkward game of probably in their private thoughts, wishing he would back down and things would move along. Only a very few Republicans standing up and saying and recognizing that Biden is the president-elect. But you have people in his administration, probably maybe even with a future political ambitions of their own, stepping up and being supportive of Mike Pompeo, the current Secretary of State, and Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate, is refusing to, is playing the sort of in-between game as well. So I don't know what is going to happen here. I've sort of joked that he wouldn't concede, but he would vacate the White House. But if he's going to go on tour with some rallies, who knows what kinds of shenanigans he might encourage in the minds of some of his more dedicated base. Given that 70% of Republicans believe that this was an illegitimate election, or at least that it was not a fair and free election, what does that mean in terms of the potential spectrum of behaviors out there? I don't know. I think the market not at all trying to discount that, or maybe it is, but not very dramatically so. So but just a note there. Yes.
Or perhaps just trying to drum up Republican support ahead of that Georgia election, which is really going to decide who's going to control the Senate for the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's a critical aspect to the situation as well. Like that could come back to bite Trump if he's encouraging essentially a coup d'etat, if you will, and the fact that American institutions and elections are not fair and free. Therefore, we can do whatever we want. That sounds a bit dramatic, overly dramatic, but that's what it ends with if he refuses to concede and there are sufficient forces on his side that agree with him. So. Stay tuned. Let's put it that way. Peter, we need to get back to another story. I think this is absolutely a massive story. And we've highlighted it on slide 3. We're jumping around a bit here. This is so fascinating. A Chinese signal, and I think I'm sure you would connect this with this recent cancellation of the Ant Group IPO. This new antitrust framework, take us through what that is and what it means.
Yeah, so it has actually been shaping up for a month when you begin to connect the dots, which are always easier looking back in hindsight. So, but what really happened, it started a month ago with Beijing revealing a new personal data law, which echoes a little bit of what we're doing here in Europe. Basically, China recognizing this new world of information and how companies are using personal data to sort of safeguard their businesses from competition, and they've now taken a step further. So the as you comment on this podcast, they Beijing out of the blue postponed or forced the exchanges in Shanghai and Hong Kong to postpone the big Ant IPO, which was going to be the world's biggest IPO ever, which was Jack Ma's former Alipay, which is basically becoming a huge integrated part of the digital economy in China, the payment system. And he was quite vocal and open-mouthed recently, and they just pulled the IPO. And the reason was that they don't feel like there is enough regulatory oversight with non-financial companies doing financial transactions like Ant Group is doing. So they wanted to change the regulatory framework. And now this come new comments from the antitrust, you can say the agencies that are doing oversight on antitrust matters in China. Liang Lau, he came out with comments today saying that they also now looking at implementing new framework to control large companies because they can see that they're using their personal data on users and they colluding to fight off basically competition. So you're seeing same sort of the same tune as what we saw in that subcommittee on antitrust matters from the US Congress that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's actually the same conclusion. And I think taking it a bit further, as we talked about in our internal meeting, this seems to be a very big signal, and we will have something on this in our outrageous predictions very soon, which will be released in a couple of months' time. That it might be Beijing's conclusion that companies in this information era are getting simply too big. It stifles competition, but it also becomes a threat to the government itself. Also, the conclusion we have come to here in Europe, especially on the U.S. technology companies, and so I think this is Beijing's attempt to rein in private companies and increase competition. This could lead to, I think, long-lasting repricing of technology stocks in China, and with Europe's regulatory attacks as well. Also, yesterday on Amazon, you're beginning to see a picture that China, Europe, and the U.S. are actually beginning to converge on the view that we need to rein in these technology companies.
Yeah, and the last domino to fall there, of course, would be the U.S.
Yeah.
Authorities, who might be the last, because a lot of these companies, at least in the West, are based in the U.S. Amazon, Google, Facebook, et cetera. Okay, we also need to take note of just the incredible surge in EU bank stocks. I assume this has to do with the COVID-19 vaccine, which you put in the title on slide four, but it's just something to flag, I guess. A really, really remarkable move, and certainly further steepening of the yield curve would be expected to help banks. Is it that simple, or is there more afoot here, Peter?
It's a very complicated story. So first of all, European banks are the ones that are operating in the most difficult and tough environment, maybe only second to Japanese banks. So the regulatory burdens are high, compliance rules are extremely tough, capital requirements are high, economic growth is very low, the yield curve is flat, it starts in negative territory. All the parameters for how you operate a bank is negative in Europe, and that's what you see on slide four, hence the bad shareholder returns. The pop, obviously, that we have seen 17% in a little bit more than a week is driven by the COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough, because it leads to a path out of not utter destruction, but a huge impairment on the balance sheet of these banks, because the carnage we're seeing in the European economy is obviously driving up loan losses on a lot of loans. And interestingly enough, you're seeing this reaction to the COVID-19, which is forward discounting an improvement for banks. But then at the same time, you have on the front page of the FT today, you have some of the regulatory bodies in Europe doing oversight of banks are talking about the EU banks need to be prepared for bad loans. So you have these lead lag effects. So the COVID-19 is obviously leading, improving the environment for banks, but then at the same time, there still be massive hangovers and bad loans. And I think it's pretty given that some European banks will fail one shape or another and be and either be acquired by other banks or shored up by some of the authorities in Europe. So I don't think we are out of the woods yet on European banks, although for now it looks like an important catalyst. But if you're trading this, it could be a tactical opportunity. But if you're a long-term investor, I'm not ready to call European banks an overweight position.
Okay, interesting perspective on the long versus short term. Briefly, Ola, on commodities, we have oil still encouraged by the lay of the land. You're pointing out some demand, or sorry, some supply side things beyond what the I guess the market is rallying on, which is the anticipation of a spring back in demand.
Yeah, absolutely. Crude oil has continued to rally higher yesterday, and so now just 4 days of gains. We've broken the small downtrend we had since September, now challenging potentially up towards 43.80 if you look at WTI crude. It is the vaccine that's the hopes for a vaccine that's basically pulling the back months higher. I put in a small slide insert there on slide 10, basically showing the 12 months spreads between the front months contract and 12 months out. And you can see that's moving higher. And that's basically a reflection of the back months rallying faster than the front. And that makes sense because it is not really until 2021 we can see a meaningful recovery in demand should the vaccine rollout be successful. But nevertheless, it's also attracting some attention at the front because that's where speculators are mostly positioned, and they're currently seeing the vaccine as the current driver. And then generally the rotation we've seen in the stock markets is also benefiting the energy sector. We've seen some of these energy ETFs rallying quite strongly as well over the past week here. So generally a good sentiment in the market. Today we got the weekly stock report, and as we can see, API expecting inventory drops across crude oil, gasoline, and distillates. So we'll see if EIA can replicate that later today. That would provide some underlying support as well. And just finally, I'll put out an update analysis that Saxo later today, but the agricultural sector remains on fire. It's now the best performing sector across the commodity space during the second half. And you can see that on slide 9. It's driven by a very strong rally in corn and soybean complex. And that was strengthened even further yesterday after the WASDE came with a bit of a shocker in terms of their supply and demand estimates. Production was lower and ending stocks were much lower than expected for at the end of the season. So that's next summer, 2021. And that is due to weather worries and extremely strong demand from China. So agriculture space is driving up, and that's is rallying, and that's obviously continued to add some underlying price pressures.
All right, and then I'll round off the commentary on what's going on briefly with FX. The general reaction has been with that COVID-19 vaccine hope trade put on, that we're seeing a big decline in the safe havens, especially the Swiss franc, but even more so the Japanese yen. The dollar and the euro somewhere in between there, and then we're seeing generally strong commodity currencies and EM. But the big single movers overnight, or the single move overnight, besides sterling, take note of euro sterling. It's really pounded down to some interesting levels, and looks ready to go further south here. I think this lifting of hoped for lifting of COVID-19 threat is a really key thing in the mix. But we will need to see that Brexit breakthrough, and I would hope ahead of the weekend. So. There's just that niggling last thing that needs to come into place for sterling to continue another 2-3% lower, I guess, to start against or euro sterling to continue that 2-3% lower. But the story overnight was the Kiwi, the RBNZ, out with its meeting, and as we flagged, might be the risk they. Essentially, it came out with a less pessimistic view on the economy. They did try to retain their language on all policy tools are possible from here, but that they will review that in February, indicating maybe that they will take one of those policy tools, potential policy tools, off the table. That was sort of the key thing I think the market observers latched onto, and we saw a massive move in the 2-year swaps, for example. You can see that on slide 6, or basically the short New Zealand interest rates, which have come flying back towards the current policy rate of 0.25%. So we've basically priced out all of the thought of negative rates. And Kiwi appreciated that and jumped higher versus a relatively weak dollar. New highs for the cycle since early 2019. And Aussie Kiwi is hitting on a key level around 106, which could open up a significant further downside within the range there. So an interesting RBNZ meeting with as that is priced out of the market, the negative rates. And then just very briefly, technically, I think a dollar Nokia is getting very interesting. If we are seeing a continued reflation trade, if we see those key resistance levels of crude oil broken in the weeks to come and into the new year, watch this 8 spot 75 level in dollar Nokia. It really does look tremendous as a potential trigger for a full repricing back to the sort of the multi-year range lows into, yeah, even 8 or below. Finally, let's get to the calendar, which thankfully, after our long podcast today, is extremely boring for today. Tomorrow we have the US CPI numbers and a couple other bits and pieces. But I think it's more about just this continued settling the market is doing after this COVID-19 vaccine bombshell. We won't really have, I don't think, any further data from that, the trials, as far as I know, for another couple of weeks. So it'll be a nervous wait for that, those headlines that'll be coming in at that point. For now, I think we'll call it a day, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call for today. Thanks for joining.